You're listening to Gruesome and Unnatural, a true crime podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of Gruesome and Unnatural. I'm Shelley.
And I'm Eric, and this is episode 70.
Hello, my gruesome addicts. Thanks for
What's up?
Yeah.
Episode 70.
Stoked for this one.
It's not that I'm stoked for any of them. You're stoked for all of them, you weirdo.
Sure I am.
But I got to pick this one because it was episode 70.
Yeah.
I think I did 50, 60, and 70. Yeah. Or they're my ideas, and I had, you know, a lot of lines through it.
Yeah, exactly. I'll stick to every 10, maybe. I don't know.
So I chose Kurt Cobain's suicide.
Or was it a suicide?
That's what I'm talking about. Or that's what we're talking about.
Yes, yes.
Because there's different theories around it all. And mm-hmm.
For sure.
What do you think it was? Before, like, I think we should say what we think it is, and then maybe we can sway our opinions on it or, you know, some facts around it.
I mean, I kind of, honestly, doing the research more and more, I'm kind of leaning toward, I always thought it was like, so he did get murdered, but I'm kind of leaning towards suicide now.
Yeah.
A little bit more. Because I always thought, you know, the whole murder thing was really interesting. But like looking more into it and the research and everything, I'm like, I don't know. What about you?
I'm still on the fence.
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to pick one or the other.
For sure.
I definitely don't believe what media puts out ever.
For sure.
And
agreed.
I feel all officials and police officers, detectives can eventually get paid off. I mean, we see it all the time in the news, mm-hmm. which I don't believe. So,
oh, yeah. Fuck. Wait.
But, you know.
Yeah.
For a lot sure. In Hollywood, there seems like to be a lot of deep, dark occult happening and conspiracy world surrounding Hollywood.
For sure. That's why, yeah, I guess that's a big, like, yeah, like, still question. Like, I mean, he could have gotten murdered, right? I don't know.
Well, let's start with the story. Shelley right here has
found some facts info.
Info on his upbringing and everything.
Yes. So let's get into it.
Let's do it.
Kurt Donald Cobain was born February 20th, 1967 in Aberdeen, Washington, to Wendy and Donald Cobain. Wendy was a waitress and Donald was a car mechanic. Kurt was the first child on both sides of the family, so he was like, remember that documentary we watched?
Yeah.
Like he, like his.
What was the documentary's name?
I can't remember. You were the one that found it and put it on. I just can't remember it, but well, you looked that up. Yeah. Yeah, his mom was just saying like he was the firstborn on each side, so like everybody like wanted to be around him and like, you know, spoil the shit out of him, and he was a cute ass fucking baby.
Was it the Kurt Cobain montage of heck?
I think it was,
because it was, there's that documentary and Soaked in Bleach. I think it's the montage of heck.
I think it was that one too.
Yeah, which is a crazy documentary. Yeah. A lot of animation and shit like that. And
yeah, that's cool how it was like, yeah, it was like real, you know, the band members talking like a and
disturbing
everything.
Disturbing punk rock grunge documentary just all over the place. It seemed like a mind fuck and like a crazy drug trip the whole time.
For sure. And I love how they play like old videos of them. Like,
yeah.
And they're super young and like him and Courtney in the weird video.
Yeah, it's for sure. Like fucking heroin does crazy things to you.
Yeah.
But let's get on with his information of his upbringing and growing up and all that stuff.
Yeah. So 3 years later, after, you know, Kurt Cobain was born, they welcomed a baby girl named Kimberly. At a young age, Kurt started to draw a lot. He drew his favorite characters, such as the creature from the Black Lagoon and Donald Duck. His grandmother, Iris Cobain, was a professional artist, so she encouraged him to like continue drawing. Not only drawing, but music became a huge interest in Kurt's life at a young age. One of his family members stated that he began singing at age 2, and around age 4, he started playing piano. Like we were saying earlier in a, well, I guess it was a documentary, right? That we watched, his mother talked about how rambunctious he was. I mean, duh, he's a child, right? Like, she was just like, he's like nonstop. He's just crazy. And his first known exposure to, you know, drugs came in 1974 when he was only 7 years old and he was diagnosed with ADHD. So Kurt was prescribed Ritalin for the condition, which it said at the time was really rare at, you know, 1974.
Isn't it crazy how mental health and depression came so big, especially right now, and we were the babies of Ritalin?
For sure, so yeah.
Of Ritalin.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I wonder what that has to do with. I'm no doctor or anything, and I also believe that no one should be prescribed Ritalin. I think ADHD is in every single fucking child.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, agree with that. Yeah, for sure.
But like I said, I'm no doctor.
Yeah, just, yeah, pretty wild though, for sure.
I don't
work
for the drug-pushing big pharma at all, so how do I know?
So when Kurt was 9 years old, his life took a huge turn because his parents were going through a divorce. And again, in this documentary, his mother was talking about how, you know, at this time, divorce wasn't really common. And so it just hit Kurt really hard. He even stated that, or she was stating that his personality changed after their divorce. He became defiant, withdrawn. Actually, in a 1993 interview, Kurt said he felt ashamed of his parents as a child and had desperately wanted to have a, quote, typical family. I wanted that security, so I resented my parents for quite a few years because of that, unquote. Hmm. His father would have him play different sports in school, but nothing Kurt really stuck with, you know, he never really interested in that. But on his 14th birthday, on February 20th, 1981, his uncle offered him either a bike or a used guitar, and Kurt chose the guitar. Soon he was trying to play Led Zeppelin's Stairway to Heaven. He also learned how to play Louie Louie.
I love that one.
Yeah, Queen's Another One Bites the Dust. And The Car Is My Best Friend's Girl, before he, like, you know, began working on his own songs. Kurt played left-handed despite being forced to write with his right hand. And even that documentary, right? And we were like, oh, shit, you pointed out. You're like, oh, shit, he's left-handed.
She's got a left-handed guitar.
Yeah, I had no idea he was, yeah. So Kurt, at one point in school, became friends with a gay student and was bullied by other students because of that. So they assumed that he was gay as well. And in an interview later on, Kurt said that he liked being associated with a gay identity because he didn't like people. And when they thought that he was gay, he was, like, left alone. So he's like, I'll crazy. Just, yeah, he's like, I want to be left alone, so I'm just going to.
It's fucked up, too.
It is, for sure. But it's like, yeah, it absolutely is. He said, quote, I started being really proud of the fact that I was gay, even though I wasn't, unquote. According to Kurt, he used to spray paint God is gay on pickup trucks in the Aberdeen area. Police records show that he was arrested for spray painting the phrase ain't got no how whatchamacallit on, like, vehicles. Kurt may have started using marijuana as early as 1980 when he was 13 years old. By the age 16, he routinely used marijuana, alcohol, and cigarettes. He also used a huffing solvent such as, like, paint thinners and correction fluid. I don't even know what that is. He at this
correction
point,
fluid is a whiteout.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, think about duh. It. Yeah. That makes sense.
And paint thinners, huffing and stuff like that. I saw a guy one time back where we used to work and back at the grocery store we used to work at together.
Yeah.
Fucking huffing the dust off from computer spray.
Oh, my God.
And he was literally, like, rolling on the fucking ground. So that shit's fucking holy crazy. Shit. Huffing is fucking crazy and what it does to you.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've seen, like, random videos. But yeah, fuck that shit. Yeah. That shit's crazy.
Definitely want to try it.
Stop. So I also am going to go, because at this point I'm going to say that he was living with runaways and, like, homeless kids. And, like, remember in that documentary, it was kind of sad. Like, his mom or dad, like, he was getting thrown back and forth almost.
Yeah, he was living with his grandparents too, right?
Yeah.
And, like, he just.
Like, nobody, like.
No one, like, his mom couldn't take care of him because he was so rebellious. So he was sent to live with his dad. And after that, he had to live with his dad and stepmother, and then after that, he had to live with his grandparents. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he was just thrown around everywhere.
I remember,
like, how else would you feel other than disconnected and wanting a family after being thrown around? Like, literally
teenager.
Feeling like they can't deal with your shit rather than sitting and talking to you.
100%, yeah.
And look at that. Like, that's just another fact of the whole Ritalin thing. Like, it's a rambunctious kid. Mm-hmm. And they kind of want him to calm the fuck down so they don't have to deal with that shit.
Yeah.
And now they're pushing him around when he's even older to mm-hmm. all these different houses because exactly. they can't fucking handle him and deal with him.
Yeah.
I would never do that to my kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember the stepmom, she's like, I kind of felt like it was my fault because she was the one, I think, kind of pushing it more and more. Like, you're out of control, dude, you know, and that kind yeah. of stuff. But like, for sure. Yeah. That's going to be hard.
Try fucking hitting him first before putting
right.
him
to it. Stop.
No, but like, there's, I don't know.
Yeah.
There's different ways to go about it.
Yeah, for sure. But then also coming, like what I'm about to say now, he later claimed that he had tried virtually every drug out there by the age of 19, except for PCP. So he was pretty, you know, pretty wild teenager. He said that he didn't try PCP because he was scared to try it after hearing horror stories about a drug-fueled rampage involving like people that had done it. So it was out of the question for him. Huffing pain was okay, though.
Yeah, exactly.
So during his second year in high school, sorry, we're going to go back a little. During his second year in high school, Kurt began living with his mother, finally in Aberdeen, 2 weeks prior to graduation, though he dropped out of Aberdeen High School when he realized he didn't have enough credits to graduate. His mother did give him an ultimatum, either find a job or leave. And after 1 week, his mom packed up his clothes and shit. And, you know, he found his clothes and other belongings packed away in boxes. So that's, again, he started going around to like living with friends. And I think at one point he did live under like a bridge.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was kind of all over the place.
Super fucked up.
Super fucked up. I know. In early 1985, Kurt formed Fecal Matter, the band. After he Sick. Dropped out of high school.
Fecal Matter.
I know.
There's a lot of pink eye in that crowd.
Oh, man. And also during high school, he like rarely found anyone that he could play music with. But while hanging out like this practice space, he met Chris Novoselic, who was a fellow devotee of punk rock. This is the bass player of Nirvana. His mother actually owned a hair salon, so they would actually go up there and like practice upstairs in okay. the salon and stuff like that. A few years later, Kurt tried to convince him to form a band with him, lending him a copy of a home demo recorded by Fecal Matter. After months of asking him, he finally agreed, and thus forming the beginnings of Nirvana. Kurt would travel frequently to Olympia, Washington to like rock concerts and stuff, and this is when he met Tracy Miranda. Remember that? She was in that documentary we watched.
Yeah.
Yeah. So their relationship was like really close but strained because of like financial problems and stuff like that. And, you know, he was kind of touring at this time. And so she supported him a lot. She even said that in documentary. She would work at like different places. She, I guess, like would often steal food from where she would work and stuff like that because they were really broke. Kurt spent most of his time sleeping in late evenings, watching TV, concentrating on his art projects, playing guitar like crazy. So, yeah, she was literally supporting both of them.
Yeah.
He wasn't working. He was just, you know, doing his thing. So eventually they did break up, and Kurt Cobain went on to officially start the band Nirvana in 1988 and made the leap to a major label in 1991, signing with Geffen Records. This is obviously when they hired Dave Grohl as the drummer.
We'll have to come back to that.
I know, you just gave me this look. Like, yeah, definitely have to come back to that.
After all, sure, yeah, after sure. the lowdown of his life, we're going to get into it like crazy. But yes, continue, please.
Yes. So the band recorded their 1991 major label debut, Nevermind. This was, their lead single was Smells Like Teen Spirit. Fucking great song. Nirvana quickly entered the mainstream, popularizing the subgenre of alternative rock called grunge, like you were just kind of saying. Yeah. Since their debut, Nirvana had sold over 28 million albums in the United States alone and over 75 million worldwide.
Crazy.
Yeah. The success of Nevermind provided numerous Seattle bands such as Alice in Chains, Pearl Jam, and Soundgarden access to like wider audiences. And they kind of got, more known for that, which I thought that was interesting. The Beatles were actually an early and lasting influence on Kurt Cobain. His aunt Mary remembers him singing Hey Jude at like age 2. I thought that was kind of cute. And he expressed he loved John Lennon. Like he called him like his idol. So eventually Kurt meets Courtney Love, and she's like kind of making advances at him and stuff like that. But Kurt kind of like just ignores him. He stated later, I was determined to be a bachelor for a few months, but I knew I liked Courtney so much right away that it was hard. It was a really hard struggle to stay away from her for many months. But in late 1991, the two were often together and bonding through using heroin a lot. Lots of drugs.
Sweet. Romance.
Yes. February 24th, 1992, a few days after the conclusion of Nirvana's Pacific Rim tour, Kurt and Courtney were married on Waikiki Beach in Hawaii. Courtney wore a satin and lace dress, and Kurt wore a Guatemalan purse and green pajamas because he had been, quote, too lazy to put on a tux. And there's a picture of it, too.
Well, heroin doesn't seem like it gives you energy for things.
No, not even on your wedding day.
Weird that they would get married in Hawaii. They're so grunge and like that. You think they would want rainy Seattle or something.
I never even thought about that. That's interesting. Yeah, I never even thought about that. You would think. There's like eight people.
In a fucking graveyard or something.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, you would think.
Some fucking alley with heroin needles. Okay. I don't know.
Some alley. Jesus Christ. But only eight people were in attendance, including Dave Grohl.
Their drummer.
Yes, their drummer. Courtney was actually warned by a friend, like, saying don't marry him because it was going to, quote, destroy her life. But Courtney was like, responded, quote, whatever, I love him and I want to be with him. It wasn't his fault. He wasn't trying to do that. I don't know what the hell she's trying to say by that, but I don't know why this chick's trying to warn her about Kurt. But eventually the couple, Kurt and Courtney, had Francis Bean Cobain on August 18th, 1992. And actually the sonogram was included in the artwork for Nirvana's single Lithium, which I didn't know.
Oh, crazy.
I had no idea. In a 1992 Vanity Fair article, Courtney admitted to a drug binge with Kurt in the early weeks of her pregnancy. At the time, she claimed that Vanity Fair had misquoted her. She later admitted to using heroin before knowing she was pregnant. But in that documentary watch, she straight out was like, yeah, I used heroin when I was pregnant. She totally said it. Yeah. So, I mean, nothing that messed up Francis or anything.
Still, it's so fucked
up.
But
like, yeah, I was like, she fucking used heroin when she was pregnant. Following a tour stop in Munich, Germany on March 1st, 1994, Kurt was diagnosed with bronchitis and severe laryngitis. He flew to Rome the next day for medical treatment, and Courtney came along a few days later on March 3rd. The next morning, she woke up to find Kurt that he had actually overdosed on a combination of champagne and Rufinol.
Yeah, I was reading that today.
Yeah. He was rushed to the hospital and was unconscious for the rest of the day. After 5 days, he was released, and he returned to Seattle. Courtney later said that this incident was his first suicide attempt. So I don't know about that. But on March 18th, 1994, Courtney called the Seattle police informing them that Kurt was suicidal.
1994?
Yeah.
Okay.
March 18th, 1994. Yeah. So this is like the same month that he had overdosed. So yeah, she called the Seattle police informing them that Kurt was suicidal and locked himself in a room with a gun. Police did arrive and confiscated several guns and a bottle of pills from him, but he insisted that he wasn't suicidal and he locked himself inside the room to get away from Courtney. So Courtney eventually arranged an intervention regarding, you know, his drug use. But shouldn't she be part of that too?
Yeah, for sure.
I was just like reading that, I was like, So that was on March 25th, 1994. 10 people involved, involved in the intervention, including musician friends, recording company executives, one of Kurt's closest friends. But Kurt showed up and he was extremely pissed, right? Like a lot of people kind of get in that situation. Yeah. Again, he locked himself in an upstairs bedroom. But, you know, by the end of the day, he did agree to undergo a detox program and he entered a residential facility in Los Angeles for a few days by March 30th, 1994. The following night, Kurt left the facility and he flew to Seattle. He was like, I'm not doing this. So most of his friends and family were kind of unaware of like where he was at this point. But on April 7th, amid rumors of Nirvana actually breaking up, the band pulled out of the 1994 Lollapalooza Festival. So they were supposed to perform there, but they pulled out of it. Yeah. And the next day on April 8th, 1994, Kurt Cobain's body was discovered at his home at 171 Lake Washington Boulevard in Seattle, Washington, by an electrician. I guess he came there to install like a security system and looked through the window and saw Kurt on the floor. Eventually, you know, police came, everything, you know, got crazy, and they found like his body, and a suicide note was found addressed to Kurt's childhood imaginary friend Buddha, spelled B-O-D-D-A-H. The note stated that he had not, quote, felt the excitement of listening to as well as creating music along with writing for too many years now, unquote. That said is in his letter. He also wrote, quote, Francis and Courtney, I'll be at your altar. Please keep going, Courtney, for Francis, for her life, which will be so much happier without me. I love you. I love you, unquote. Kurt Cobain's body had been there for days, according to like the coroner's report. They estimated that he had died actually on April 5th, 1994, at the age of 27. So he'd been there for a couple days. Why nobody was trying to find him, I'm confused.
He was there for like 3 days or something before he was found.
Yeah, they're saying that the coroner's estimating that he died, April 5th, which was 3 days before the electrician came and found him. So it's like, I don't know.
You said he escaped from the...
He didn't escape, he left.
Well, he left. Yeah, it wasn't an escape, but he left
the facility.
The treatment center.
The rehab, yeah.
But I wonder if rehabs call... They should warn like their loved ones or something, inform them like, hey, this person just left after one day and... We're worried they might overdose on something, so might want to check on where he is or wherever he would be.
I wonder. Because I wonder if, like...
So when they leave, they're like, all right.
Yeah.
Like how are they helping anyone there?
Yeah, but they're also... You're an adult. You can't force somebody to stay there.
Yeah, but, like, you could tell somebody that he just left, so someone needs to go check on him.
Because I know people can't force someone to obviously go into these rehabs. So, but also, like...
And they can leave on
their own. If somebody brought him there, I wonder if they're like, hey, look, I'm going to get your contact information in case... Something happens.
And if it was 3 days, no one hit him up or anything? Even his wife?
I know. That's the biggest thing.
How does his wife not know where he was for 3 days? Just
Is there a
contact thing because she's doing heroin too?
I mean, maybe.
Why isn't she in the treatment center as well or in another one? So there's a lot of fucking questions.
Yes.
So are you done with the information right now?
I'll let
can we get to the story? what we're thinking of?
Are you fucking done yet? I was just going to say the autopsy showed... his blood contained 1.52 milligrams per liter of the tranquilizer diazepam and heroin. Mm-hmm. Some medical experts said that much heroin could kill a person three times over, but somebody.
An addict, like someone that's using that much, can take way more. Like
exactly.
Mean drinking.
Yeah. Like, I mean, exactly. Yeah, exactly. You have a high tolerance.
I don't need to go to rehab.
No. but if you have a high tolerance for something like that, especially he had been trying it since he was 19, doing all these different drugs, and he's 27 at this time.
So he would
a lot of years
be able to take or sustain that. So I guess that goes on the side of suicide.
But let's talk about, so they don't really release the pictures. There's tiny little pictures.
I've seen some pictures.
There's a box of bullets.
And you're going to post them, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I can even like look at them right now.
Box of shotgun shells.
Yes.
And it was a 20-gauge shotgun? Or was it a 12-gauge?
Remington Model 11 20-gauge shotgun.
20-gauge shotgun.
20-gauge shotgun.
So a 20-gauge shotgun is not as powerful as a 12-gauge. It can still kill someone, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I read, he also shot himself with birdshot. Now, birdshot is hundreds of tiny BBs that used to pepper something up, as Dave Chappelle would say in his stand-up. Pepper a motherfucker up. And that's what I use to quail hunt because it's a spread of hundreds of tiny BBs.
Yeah.
But at point blank range, definitely could kill someone. But I wonder why someone would choose that. Is that all he had? That's weird. And him owning a gun is weird because doesn't he have a song where he tells us a shitload of times he doesn't have a gun? No, I don't. Have a gun.
Oh, he does say that, does it? Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
That's so funny. Actually, now that you say that, I just read that he actually purchased it from his friend.
Exactly.
Musician Dylan Carlson. So, I wonder. I mean, maybe he was like,
That was just a joke from the song.
No,
he's telling us the truth. He doesn't have a gun. It was a murder. God, no, but that to me, that's weird to kill yourself with birdshot.
And that's a big ass fucking gun, like rifle. But I know, I forgot that I heard
12 gauge is bigger than the 20 gauge, but still, it's a long gun, And I saw a video of someone reenacting it and how he killed himself. And they sat on the ground and they're able to pull the trigger and everything. I mean, it's doable. But also, I've read and saw pictures of his heroin, the shells, everything neatly by his feet.
Yeah, so the box of bullets. But that's another thing you're saying, because this is the picture. I wish I can get closer to like actually see the box, the actual box, to see what it says, to see, like, did he use one of the bullets in there? Like what you're saying, the bird shot? Or like, it's kind of hard to tell because it's in that bag.
Yeah, let me try to get it on my phone and zoom in a little bit.
But then also, like you're saying, there was some other stuff found next to him, like that that little box.
Yeah, so it says 20 gauge, and what I'm reading it is 2 3/4, which is the size of the shell, but it's super blurry.
Yeah, exactly.
From my understanding, it was birdshot.
Oh, and that was another thing I read, that it was, okay, again, the photos haven't been released, but on several different websites that I was like researching this on stated that the gun was found resting on his chest. I found that hard to believe if you shoot yourself with that big of a shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
But the way
we saw the reenactment video,
if he's sitting down,
he would have fell back and maybe holding onto the shotgun still.
Yeah, that's true. But one of his arms is to his side, and you can still see like that wristband that he had from being in rehab.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything. But yeah, from what I heard, it's like a birdshot spread. So that's weird to shoot yourself with that.
One other thing, though, if he were to shoot himself, like, didn't one of the, like, the gun, I guess when you shoot yourself, doesn't the bullet, like, come out one side or something? They were saying
it was a semi-automatic gun, so it would project the shell. And the way he was holding it, it should have projected the shell on the right side of him. But they found the shell on the left side, which they said could be a deflection off of his leg from the shell.
Oh, that's right.
After he shot himself, but still, kind of weird. Kind of weird.
For sure, yeah. For sure. Yeah, so they found like his ID next to him.
Wasn't there something with the fingerprints also? Did we see something like that?
I can't remember that. But there was this box you're talking about. There's like a spoon, there's lighters, syringes. There's a bunch of paraphernalia.
Yeah, it's a heroin box.
Yeah, and like a cigar box. So, I mean, now who knows if he took a bunch of fucking heroin and then... I don't know.
So the different like conspiracies surrounding it all that I've heard is Courtney Love had something to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But like, she hired someone. But in the documentary, she was there when he overdosed the first time in Rome off of Rufinol and champagne.
Yeah.
And she could have just fucking left him there and 100%. Had him die right there. So why would she take him? To get help or call 911 or whatever. I don't think it's 911 in Rome, you know.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Whatever the number is for emergency contact.
For sure. But, I know we were both thinking the same thing.
So, why wouldn't she let him die then?
Yeah.
You know? So that's kind of weird.
And that was literally like a month before he actually did die. So
that kind of like, to me at least, shows that she probably didn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
And
then like in interviews that he does too, he talks about suicide. He's like, I just want to do a bunch of drugs. And you know, he talks about stomach issues, but they think it was the heroin that was giving him stomach issues. And he was like,
Say the heroin fixed his stomach issues?
Yeah. That's what kind of he was like saying. Yeah.
So it's but just like, he does talk about suicide and
a lot.
For sure.
But I know.
Yeah, you listen to his music and it sounds like it. You hear the sadness in his voice and the lyrics of what he writes.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I'm not doubting suicide. We're just kind of exploring the different theories and conspiracies behind it, I guess.
Because mm-hmm. a lot of people talk about that.
The other thing, when you said he got signed to Geffen Records.
Oh, yeah.
Geffen was also in contact. I don't know if he was their manager, but he was something in the business industry with Chris Cornell and Chester Bennington. So it's like this guy...
Also suicides.
And they committed suicide too. And I'm not saying that he had anything or they didn't do it. I don't know. You know, just look it up, go down that rabbit hole.
Yeah.
But That's weird to have all those three guys under you mm-hmm. and commit suicide.
Yeah, very weird. For
suicide
sure,
for note, sure. You see different things, like the last two sentences or what his last statement looked a little different writing.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of people that are
But then they said they cleared that through whatever, I don't know what they're called in the police department, but they...
Like writing analysis.
Exactly.
Kind of like, yeah.
They
yeah,
said yeah, that is Cobain's.
Yeah.
Like there is a... similarities in the first part of the letter and the last part of the letter of how he
yeah,
wrote
that's
it.
Right. So, yeah, yeah. And I can see that. I mean, talking about like Francis and I'll be at your altar and like, she's better without me, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, even when you look at, you know, I think when we were, again, this documentary we watched, they were like going through different band names and all the writings they had and stuff like that and how sloppy his writing, like it does, you know, kind of look very similar to his writing. Yeah. But again, I mean, I'm not a professional, I have no idea.
I went down a rabbit hole one night with this also, and there is talk that Smells Like Teen Spirit was originally written. He wrote it about child sex trafficking.
Oh, you did tell
and
me that, yeah.
His manager Geffen made him rewrite it into something different. That he didn't want to release it like that. And that really made him depressed and he started losing it more because he knows what was going on in Hollywood or something like that. Maybe yeah. it has to do with some kind of island that I've heard of out there.
Oh, shit.
I don't know. That's I don't know. Crazy. But it's yeah, like kind of all like, you know, when you, like I said, when it has to do with Hollywood, I question it like fucking crazy.
Yeah, for sure. I know.
They
yeah.
do some weird ass fucking shit.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. That's really, that's a trip. That's a trip.
So after all this, I don't know where I stand still.
I know. Me either. Like I was like kind of wanting to go towards like maybe it was a murder, but like more and more I'm like I don't know.
He seemed troubled from the beginning.
Exactly.
So that totally leads to depression and suicide.
Yeah, for sure. But interesting. I thought that was kind of crazy. The 27 Club is an informal list consisting mostly of popular musicians, artists, actors, and other celebrities who die at the age of 27,
yep.
which Kurt Cobain is part of. So this is just a whole little thing that I found. Although the claim of a statistical spike for the death of musicians at that age have been refuted by scientific research, it remains a cultural phenomenon, with many celebrities who die at 27 noted that for their high-risk lifestyles. Beginning with the deaths of several 27-year-old popular musicians between 1969 and 1971, such as Brian Jones, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and Jim Morrison, dying at the age of 27 came to be and remains... popular cultural celebrity journalism and entertainment industry lore. I thought this was pretty crazy. Where is it? Okay. In 2011, 17 years after Kurt Cobain's death, Amy Winehouse, she died at 27. It said 3 years earlier, Amy Winehouse's personal assistant, Alex Haynes, told the British press that Amy Winehouse was 25 at this time, feared that she would join Jim Morrison, Brian Jones, and Kurt Cobain in dying at 27. She said, quote, he reckoned she would join the 27 club of rock stars who died at that age. She told me, I have a feeling I'm going to die young, unquote. So it was like really trippy to hear about that. So a lot of musicians went on and in their songs, they talk about Club 27 or 27 Club, or they make references to like being 28 in their songs and stuff like that. So I just thought that was kind of crazy, 27 Club.
Cobain came out and said that he was going to join the 27 Club.
He said that? I never heard that.
Yeah.
What? I never heard that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So it's almost like
was planning it or something.
Yeah, like he knew that he's like, I'm not going to do all these drugs.
He was going to get killed by somebody.
Or maybe.
Ooh. But I don't know.
But, yeah, I know. It's interesting to talk about or to think about and, you know, if it could really happen. But I don't know.
Well, let us know what you guys think.
Yeah, I would love to know if you have any other.
And, you know, I was a huge Nirvana fan. This is nothing against him or Courtney Love or anything like that. You know, it's just there's some crazy, weird things behind it all.
For sure.
And definitely. I think everything gets looked up more through a microscope. Or a magnifying glass, as a detective back in the day would use.
Yes.
When it's a Hollywood icon, when it's
someone
in the entertainment business, and there's going to be all these kind of theories and conspiracies that come out of it for sure.
For sure.
Some might be real, some might be not. None of them, or all of them.
Yeah.
Who fucking knows?
I know.
Only the people involved.
Oh, I know. Exactly.
So I'm still on the fence about it, mainly because of what he shot himself with, where the shell ended up, and whose manager was.
For sure. I know. I'm still up in the air about it, too. But yeah, it's all very interesting. Interesting to think about. But yeah, let us know what you guys think, because I'm super interested. Until next Monday, guys, stay safe and be aware.
And no, I don't have a gun.